Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. It's Thursday the 12th of May and I'm Eunice Wanjiru in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the World Economic Forum Africa kicks off in Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
This forum does bring about investors, people who have money who are looking to place it somewhere, and Africa is the right place to do it.
Despite international uproar, the Kenyan government sets aside funds to proceed with the repatriation of Somali refugees from Dadaab.
The refugees will be repatriated to their countries of origin or to third-party countries for resettlement.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
The 26th annual World Economic Forum Africa began on Wednesday in Kigali. The goal of this forum is to promote public-private partnership, and the theme of this year's event in Africa is digital transformation. The three-day forum will convene more than 1,500 delegates for deliberations on a range of Africa's economic aspects, including analysing opportunities and risks, with a focus on the fourth industrial revolution. Temi Tope Omolade has more on the forum, commonly referred to as Africa's Davos.
More than six African heads of states and governments are taking part in the forum, as well as business leaders and corporations from across the world. The forum runs under the theme Connecting Africans' Resources Through Digital Transformation. In a panel on how the growth landscape is changing across the continent, Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta, emphasized the importance of a connected Africa.
We cannot talk about intra-Africa trade if we do not have intra-Africa connectivity. And we in East Africa are really, really working very hard in that particular direction. I think for the first time since independence, by the end of this year, beginning of next year, we will be connected to Ethiopia.
The first day of the forum, President Kenyatta, Nigerian business Tony Lumelu, and other international stakeholders addressed a number of African concerns, such as scaling up capacities of young entrepreneurs. Also, expanding trade and cooperation is crucial, as Lumelu sees.
So in the 21st century, and this is a conversation I would like to be part of, let me to challenge ourselves on how to move our economy into a much more productive type economy.
Businessman Ephraim Ramwenge from Botswana, who is also participating in the forum, says that the business opportunity in East Africa region are so immense.
There's a huge opportunity in energy. There's a huge opportunity in value addition, especially for export, because we have access to 140 million customers. We are closer to, and these are in other countries, we are closer to Western Uganda than Kampala is. As Kigali. We are closer to Eastern DRC than Kinshasa is. Well, we have Burundi, we have Tanzania, we have Western Tanzania. So the idea is that if you can create value addition, find raw materials locally or import them and manufacture them here, you already have a market because of the integration of the East African community.
On the second day of the forum, panelists will also deliberate on how corporate community can help address risks to Africans' development, as well as ways to modify and transform Africa's production and manufacturing to increase productivity. The forum will also provide a networking platform for participating governments and businesses, as well as individuals, which could see new opportunities pursued.
Temi Tope Omolade with that report. To follow up on the World Economic Forum Africa taking place in Kigali, I caught up with DW's East Africa correspondent Edith Kimani, who is at the Economic Forum in Kigali, and first wanted to know what main innovations and business ideas were likely to be discussed.
We're not sure what innovations are going to come out of this, but what we do know is that this forum is actually quite unique this year around because it's focusing on what is being called an educated economy or an informed economy, basically using the education sector and certain skills to improve sectors across the continent. And so the theme this year is actually the fourth industrialization revolution.
The forum comes at a time when there's an anti-corruption forum in London going on and the swearing in of Uganda's President Museveni. I would imagine that this would affect the outcome.
this is something that you would think would be discussed heavily, given that there are 9 sitting presidents, heads of state from Africa, who are attending this forum. But unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be playing a part in any of the discussions so far. And so maybe in the coming days, that issue will come up, because as you've rightly said, it's almost impossible to talk about development and infrastructural growth in any African country without addressing governance and especially matters of corruption.
So do you think that it is bound to bring about any development in Africa?
I think even if they don't talk about corruption, there are definitely some gains that we can look forward to. To begin with, this forum does bring about investors, people who have money who are looking to place it somewhere, and Africa is the right place to do it. Even without addressing the issue of corruption or talking about it overtly, this forum definitely has a lot of things that Africa can look forward to. It brings together policymakers, it brings together businessmen and businesswomen, investors who are looking to put their money and stream their money into places where they can get high returns. And Africa has been known to do that. And we're being told by the IMF that this year, Africa is actually recording a slowdown in its growth. And so it's time for Africa to really rethink its strategy on its economy. And this forum is helping do that.
How did Rwanda prepare for the forum, and why was it chosen?
Rwanda is a front runner when it comes to doing business. In fact, it's the second place in Africa in terms of ease of doing business. And so it's not surprising that the conference was held here. But I think subliminally, it's also sending a message to all the other African countries and their representatives who are gathered here to see what their countries can amount to. Let's not forget that Rwanda is still quite young, and yet they've been able to leapfrog other East African countries. And so it's a perfect example of what Africa could be if the leaders come together and work out their governance issues, invest in the right places. Kigali, and indeed Rwanda, is a perfect example to showcase what can happen.
I was speaking to DW's Edith Kimani in Kigali.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The Kenyan government said on Wednesday that it was going ahead with plans to close the Dadaab refugee camp, which has hundreds of thousands of refugees, mostly from Somalia and South Sudan. It is often referred to as the world's largest refugee camp. Agencies like the UN are calling on Kenya to reconsider its decision to close down the refugee camps in the country. Kenya's interior minister says that the country has set aside 1 billion Kenya shillings to cater for the repatriation process. DW's Andrew Wasike in Kenya brings us more.
The plan to avert the repatriation of nearly 600,000, mostly Somali refugees, seems to be heading into the headwinds after Kenyan Interior Minister Joseph Nkaiseri on Wednesday announced that Kenya was ready to begin the process as soon as possible. Addressing journalists in the Kenyan capital Nairobi on Wednesday, Kenyan Interior Minister Joseph Nkaiseri said that the government is currently putting together a timetable for the execution of the plan and expects the camp to be closed by November.
To kickstart the repatriation process and subsequent closure of the Dadaab refugee complex, the government has availed with immediate effect $10 million US as a part of putting in place a requisite technical infrastructure to oversee the repatriation process.
The Kenyan government has, though, toned down their threat to close down all refugee camps. Nkaiseri clarified that only Somali refugees, most who are residing at the Dadaab refugee camp, were being targeted. He noted that the government will only close down the Dadaab refugee complex, the largest refugee camp in the world.
The government of the Republic of Kenya has commenced the exercise of closing the Dadaab refugee complex. The refugees will be repatriated to their countries of origin or to third-party countries for resettlement.
Nkaiseri told reporters that refugee camps in Kenya have become centers of poaching, human trafficking, and proliferation of illicit weapons, which compromises Kenya's international security rating. As a result of the insecurity, Kenya has suffered the brunt of negative consequences, such as travel advisories and poor humanitarian rating, with negative consequences to the country's economy. Somali refugees who are to be affected by the threat of forced eviction lament that their country is not yet safe. They are pleading with the Kenyan government to allow them to stay, saying that in most areas conditions are not yet conducive to return. 38-year-old Halgan Aniso is among those who wish not to return.
Life in Somalia is very hard. As I stand here, I have no idea where my husband is. One night we were at home and two men approached us and started firing at us. My husband escaped and I was forced to stay with my children. They asked me about him. They hit me with their rifle butts. It was horrifying. Somalia, no. I have nothing while I'm here. If I fall ill, I won't get treatment. The food rations are not enough for myself and my children, but I will never go back to Somalia while there is no peace. I would rather stay here.
That report was compiled by Andrew Wasike in Nairobi. The British Prime Minister David Cameron is host to the Anti-Corruption Summit in London. Ahead of the talks, he was caught on camera on Wednesday telling Queen Elizabeth II that Nigeria was fantastically corrupt. It is estimated that around $50 billion is lost to corruption and other financial crimes across Africa each year. It may seem like Africa is losing the war on corruption, but Tanzanian President John Pombe Magufuli is changing the narrative in his country. He has been invited by Prime Minister David Cameron to attend the summit in London. Fred Muvunyi prepared the following report.
Nicknamed the Bulldozer for his style of leadership, Tanzania's President John Magufuli has earned credibility and acclaim both in and outside Tanzania for his fight against corruption. Since assuming office in November 2015, Magufuli is rebuilding lost trust with Western donors by making the fight against graft one of his main priorities. Some Tanzanians in Arusha who spoke to DW believe their president is on the right course despite existing challenges.
President Magufuli is facing a huge challenge because of the way he's tackling corruption. He's doing a good job, but the corrupt people don't appreciate that. He's really trying, and that is why those who are used to taking bribes are opposed to him. We as citizens should join hands with him to fight those corrupt officials so that we defeat corruption and work with our president.
He is facing a lot of obstacles because people have been used to doing things like they want. But the president is really trying hard to fight corruption. He's dismantling corrupt networks. For example, there are some unscrupulous business people who've hidden a huge consignment of sugar and are now selling it at exorbitant prices. So our prayer is that our president continues to dismantle such networks and help the poor and weak citizens like us.
There are many challenges. First, those who are engaged in corrupt activities are top officials, influential leaders and wealthy people. That in itself is a problem. So you should work hard and not favor anyone in this war against corruption. Particularly these anti-corruption authorities are the ones which are very corrupt, the police force and also judiciary.
UK Prime Minister David Cameron, who will host the Anti-Corruption Summit on Thursday, invited Magufuli after being satisfied with his strict measures against corruption. According to a 2014 survey by Transparency International, 22% of Africans who had contact with public services admitted to paying bribes in the previous year.
Fred Mavuni reporting. And it's now time to listen to our radio drama series, Crime Fighters, a Learning by Ear production.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Welcome. It's time for our detective series, Crime Fighters, Drugs to Cure, Drugs to Kill, by Mukoma Wangugi. This fourth episode is entitled Things Are Happening. In Ketago People's Republic, Detective Kalumba and his two colleagues are investigating the death of 21-year-old Peter, a poisoning made to look like a drug overdose. At Peter's funeral, the preacher suggested to them that a healer might have had something to do with the murder.
The name the preacher gave us, Johnston Lamatu, was that of a local traditional healer. It made sense. whoever prepared the cyanide capsules had to have a good knowledge of medicine, access to illegal drugs, and a complete disregard for the law. So Chokbang Salamisha and I decided to pay Lamatu a visit. The image that comes to mind when people hear the words traditional healer is of backwoods, smoky hats, and creepy noises, but Lamatu's place was nothing like that. He lived on a small farm, keeping cows, goats, and chickens. In other words, he looked just like any other middle-class farmer, but there was no way the money he was making from the farm could have paid for that sparkling new four-wheel pickup. He seemed to be expecting us. At any rate, he showed no surprise.
I can see you're here on police business. Why?
Correct. I am Detective Kalumba, and these are my partners, Salamisha and Chokbang. Dr. Lamatu, do you know a boy called Peter?
There are many Peters in this world. I'm sure I know one.
How many Peters do you know who have recently been poisoned?
I heard about that unfortunate boy, but I can't see what it has to do with me.
Well, now, let's see. Can you tell us which medical school trains which doctors?
Okay. First of all, I'm not a witch doctor. I'm a healer. The knowledge I have has been passed down from generation to generation. It's tried and tested. A witch doctor uses smokes and screens and incantations and tries to calm the patient's fears. I use science, traditional African science.
He's right, you know. Us calling him a witch doctor will be like him mistaking us for vigilantes.
Ah, Salimisha. This man is a charlatan. He sells miracle water, tonics to cure the incurable, cancer, AIDS and all.
I'm afraid, detective, it's you who is the charlatan.
Huh?
You're speaking of things you have no business talking about. Your misunderstanding of what I do is based entirely on hearsay.
Our apologies, Mr. Lamatu. But you do have work to do. We need to find Peter's killers, otherwise they may kill again. Can we put our differences aside and work together?
I didn't know the boy. Never saw him, not even once.
Well then, if you have nothing to hide, may we take a look around?
Do you have a search warrant?
No, we don't. We are hoping for a little good faith on your part.
Good faith? You want me to help you violate my own rights? Fine. Go ahead and look around. You'd better leave the place as tidy as you find it.
Thank you, Mr. Lamatu.
Okay, let's do it.
Hey guys, come here! I think I found something!
What is it, Kalumba?
What is it?
Let's have a look. What is it?
It looks like a capsule-making kit. See?
There must be thousands of capsules here. And what's that white powder? Lamatu, what is all this?
I've never seen that briefcase before. I don't use capsules for the medicines I prescribe. You can ask my patients.
Then what are they doing here?
I'm telling you the truth. Someone must have left it there for you to find, presumably. Don't you think that if it were mine, I'd have hidden it better? Or poured the contents down the toilet as soon as I had your car pull up?
I found it right here on your desk. You could have been hiding it in plain sight.
Did you ever consider that your informant might be misdirecting you? That they want you to look in all the wrong places?
We are going to get the powder tested and have the kit checked for prints. If they match yours, we are coming for you. And we won't be so polite next time.
You do that. I'll be waiting for your apology right here in my own home.
My gut feeling was that Lamatu was innocent, and Salamisha and Chokbang both agreed. It was all far too easy, and his explanation of how he practiced medicine made sense. He seemed to have respect for both his work and his patients. As we talked it over in the car, it became obvious that we needed to have a serious talk with the preacher. We were on our way there when my phone rang. It was forensics. They'd found a prescription note in some of Peter's belongings, from Mary Jane's pharmacy. We decided to split up. Salamisha and Chokbang could go and find the preacher, while I headed to the pharmacy. As I walked in, I missed a step, tripped, and did an awkward little dance to regain my balance. I looked up to see Mary Jane laughing at the off-balance detective.
What are you doing? Spinning or dancing?
She was very beautiful.
Either way, welcome to Mary Jane's.
Oh, thank you. I am Detective Kalumba. I have a few questions for you if you don't mind.
All right, but I have the answers already.
You do?
Of course I do. I know nothing. Now go home and let me work.
Ask yourself why a moderately intelligent cop would show up on your doorstep if he didn't have a good reason. Let's show each other some respect.
I quite agree, Detective Kalumba. On the other hand, wouldn't you agree that mutual suspicion is more appropriate?
Let's keep it simple then. Mary Jane, what do you know?
Detective, I wish things were that simple. I'm a very busy woman. What is it that you want to know?
I'm investigating a murder. Fake drugs are involved. Your name came up. Shall we sit down and have a proper conversation?
I have a lot of work to do, Detective. Ask your questions.
This is why you tell me the truth, for your own sake, but also to do some good. Tell me, this young man, Peter, who killed him, do you know?
All I can tell you is our lives are over. You've woken an angry giant, Detective.
Mary Jane, are you expecting anyone?
No.
Hide in the bathroom.
Okay.
We are here, Kalumba.
We're here.
Chokbank, Salamisha, thank God.
Oh, Chokbank, are you okay?
I've been hit.
Chokbank, hang on. Salamisha, do you see them? What's going on?
What's going on? That's a good question. Be sure to tune in next time to find out if the detectives managed to escape safely. You can listen to this episode again at dw.com/crimefighters. And now stay tuned for a meeting with a special guest, Mukoma Wangugi, the author of this series. The goal of Crime Fighters is not only to entertain, but also to give listeners useful knowledge. Why did you choose the topic counterfeit medicine?
Just the whole idea of there's something wrong about giving somebody fake medicine. You know, there's something I think morally wrong, maybe more than other crimes, you know, like shoplifting. I would say the idea of somebody coming to you, you know, and they have hope, you know, and they're sick, possibly it's a terminal illness, and then they end up with fake medicine is just wrong.
What do you hope to achieve with this series?
To entertain and to educate. To entertain, you know, because they're very lively characters, I think, and there are moments of suspense. So, and at the same time, to educate and raise questions around why people need fake drugs and to question the idea of that it's actually the poor who can't afford going to hospitals who end up buying the fake drugs, you know, and to question why African governments don't break patents, for example, AIDS, for God's sake. I mean, we should break the AIDS patent and make our own cheaper drugs.
In episode 4 of Drugs to Cure, Drugs to Kill, you depict a healer, Lamatu, who insists on using traditional African science instead of hocus pocus. How important is it for you to contradict clichés about Africa?
I think we have to fight those stereotypes that portray, you know, Africans as irrational, as without agency, as if, you know, they're just sitting there waiting for Western help. And I think once people can see the full humanity of Africans, then it becomes easy for us not to exploit them. You know, there's a lot of exploitation going on, both by the African elites, but also by Western elites and Western governments. So I think it's very, very important to show that agency, to show that Africans are not just sitting around waiting for Western help, that, you know, they have people who practice African medicine, communities that come together in terms of a crisis, and their own heroes, you know, and so on and so forth.
Do you have a message for our listeners?
I hope you enjoy the story, but also listen to some of the questions that have been asked in the drama, you know, and also think of solutions.
And before we leave, here's a reminder of our main stories. Rwanda holds the 26th World Economic Forum Africa in its capital, Kigali. Kenyan government goes ahead with its plan to close down the Dadaab refugee camp. And in other news, President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda is to be sworn in later in the day. Stay tuned to Africa Link for coverage of what Museveni's sixth term means. And for more news on the continent, go to dw.com/Africa. That's all we had for you. Do send us your comments and feedback on one or more of the stories in an SMS to country code 491609575910, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or in a letter to Africa Link DW53110 Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Wanjiro in Bonn, and bye for now.